Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Today's a very special day for us. Lima, very special day for you. I think everybody in studio, I think a lot of people listening right now, this is the voice of our adolescence, our adulthood, our childhood. He joins us in studio
Tony
right now.
Tony Schiavone, all right.
Woo! And we're still planting the flag in your damn Ohio State.
Perfect. He was rubbing it in. Yeah, Jim Ross, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Jim Ross joining us in studio right now. Obviously, Ohio State, that one was a rough one. I was happy. I didn't mind what he did when he planted the flag. Lima didn't either. That was fantastic. Some people, they took a little bit of umbrage with it, but then I think, honestly, when we found out that they could be drafting him and a lot of people started to fall in love with him towards the end of the season, people were like, no, it's fine because they're Browns fans too, and they knew that the Browns would have the number one overall pick, so all of a sudden that became fine. The whole thing with Kansas, everything became fine because they knew they were getting themselves a fantastic quarterback. You have a very good relationship with Baker. It's something I want to get into. Obviously, Lincoln Riley, your connection with Oklahoma football. You're on the sidelines. We always see you on the sidelines. The hat, everything, it's just synonymous. I do want to ask you, though. So, you see Mick Foley going off the top of the cage, and you've told the story before. You've told the story a little bit before. Did you know he was coming off the top of the Hell in the Cell and falling on that table? Did you know anything beforehand?
No, absolutely not. Lawler and I worked better when we were spontaneous, and we could use our instincts, whatever we thought our instincts were, to be natural. And I think the issue with pro wrestling in general is, you know, it's hard to take seriously for some people. But that was a very serious moment in our view, and we called it that way. So I had no idea. I had a guy the other day. I was in Dallas getting ready to fly to someplace to do something, and I'm in the priority lane because I'm an executive platinum. So boarding in group one, right? So this guy's behind me, and he's really close, like a prison movie close. He's in my sphere, so to speak. And he says, God is my witness. He's broken in half. I said, okay, I ain't going to say nothing. So then he says,
is that foreplay?
Then he says, for the love of God, somebody stop the damn match. Okay, that's enough. he's moving the hair on my neck that close. So I wheel around as good as a fat old guy can wheel. I wheeled around, and before I could say anything, he's there with like a 12 or 13-year-old son. And the son says to me, I'm really sorry, JR, but he does this at home all the time, and my mom hates it.
Got the same treatment.
So it was one of those, what's your childhood moments to this guy, and he just got a little overwhelmed.
Man, that's unbelievable.
Well, I didn't know the question. Stupid ass answer. I did not know.
It was a great answer.
But the issue is that we rarely knew any of the outcomes because we had good instincts. Jerry's a brilliant guy, been around forever, and I had a pretty good run. So we kind of figured our instincts would bring us through. It's like calling a game. You don't rehearse to call a touchdown play. If you do, you're kind of weird, especially if you did it in a mirror. And you work radio.
We know some guys like that.
Did you know, did when Terry Funk came running out, was that real? Was that like, did he know like he was going to go over and he was going to go out or something like that? Or did he really think he was really, really, really hurt?
I think the latter. I think everybody in the back thought that Mick had, it was his last stunt. Because that was an ad lib. Terry Funk gave Mick the idea to start the match on top of the cell. But that was before they made it wrestler-friendly in as much as now they have holes in the cell where you can put your feet in to climb to the top if necessary. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a 330-pound blivet named Mick Foley who's trying to climb the cell. That was no easy feat, by the way.
Yeah.
So I didn't know where he was going. I thought, well, there'd be the old wrestling thing. He'll get about halfway up and he'll fall or get knocked down or something. But that didn't happen.
Unbelievable.
Man, they're giving you ways to get to the top of the cell. Wrestling has gone soft. This is why I watch football. Come on.
Like the NFL. It's like the NFL. Right. They're treating all the wrestlers like they're quarterbacks.
So I didn't know. I thought we were Jim Ross, the iconic broadcaster announcer. We were having fun because I said, can I bring him on as XFL announcer? Because we remember that whole story. We had Matt Vasgersian tell the story on how he was summarily dismissed after just one game because Vince McMahon didn't exactly love the style, didn't love the passion. He's like, no, I'm here to call a game. Right. And Vince McMahon was like, no, no. And next thing we know, Jim Ross, the voice of the XFL.
I got a call. I was in Orlando. Lawler and I and Jonathan Coachman did a game for the Orlando team, and we were the alternate game. So when the game in Vegas got slow, they switched to our game, right? And we had a pretty good game going score-wise. Quality football still sucked, but we had a good game going. And so we broke in, did our thing. We had had a couple of big plays to call that just worked out. And when rehearsed, they didn't do me the finish. They just said, here's maybe a touchdown. No, they didn't say nothing. So then I go to my hotel room after stopping by the bar, and the phone rings. No cell phones at that point. At least I didn't have one. And it was Dick Ebersole. Said, well, you had a hell of a night, JR. Oh, thanks. I just thought it was over. He just gave me a compliment. And he said, we're going to put you on the A game starting next week. Really? You were working Jesse Ventura, which was a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah,
the governor. So that was another story. There's plenty of stories about that. But yeah, I felt bad for Matt. He was a better broadcaster than I. But I did have probably a little bit higher level of enthusiasm. You know, I knew that everything was at the bottom of the ninth walk off home run. I didn't go there. But when it was time to punch it a little bit, I had no issues doing that.
How many other sports have you done altogether other than your work in professional wrestling?
I've done MMA. I've done football. In college, I did basketball and baseball. I was also an umpire and a football and basketball official for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Officiated 14 state championship games in Oklahoma in three sports. Worked in the NAIA playoffs, JUCO playoffs, in basketball and football and baseball. There was a lack of baseball umpires. I went to Major League Umpire School in 76 and finished seventh in my class of 121. One of us made it, Tim McClellan. Tim McClellan, you might remember, he was the home plate umpire when George Brett's Pine Tar incident.
Yeah.
So he's my buddy, still is. And so when I came back, I was immediately hired in the Big Eight and the Southwest Conference and all those JUCOs around that part of the country. I was really umpiring 5 days a week. It was amazing. I had a lot of fun. I just got burned out on it. I was doing three sports, never the off-season thing. It was a good experience for me. I'm a sports guy, obviously, but wrestling is what I made the money at.
Did you ever have to throw anybody out of a game?
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anybody ever follow you out to the parking lot or anything like that?
No, I threw there was a kid. Southeastern Oklahoma had a coach named Dr. Don Parham, and he wanted everybody to call him Dr. Parham, not coach. Dr. Parham. Reminded me of Fraser Crane, Dr. Fraser Crane. And so I got a guy. I called a guy out. We have a two-man umpire crew. I'm a home plate umpire. I go down to cover third on a bang-bang play. I got the guy. I can't remember. I got his guy out. His guy was obviously out, I think. And the third baseman was going, I'm going to give you some, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And so I said, well, listen, here's the deal. You keep talking, I'm going to throw your center fielder out of the game. Dr. Parham was there. Center fielder, yes, sir, because he's your best player. This guy's not worth a damn. You lose to him, ain't going to hurt you. So then he starts kicking dust and everything. But the center fielder was named Brett Butler. Oh, Brett Butler was
a
big-time player
in
Major Leagues for years. But that was one of my favorite ad-libs. I'm going to throw his ass out of the game because he's a player, and you're not. So shut up.
Did he shut up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dr. Parham, I said, Dr. Parham, you're a very smart man. You got a chance to keep this kid in the game, or you can let him talk, and he's gone.
Yeah, that'll do the trick. See, he knew all the angles back then. Jim Ross joining us in studio. I've always wanted to know this, and we'll get to Baker Mayfield, biggest Oklahoma fan in the country. He's going to the game. That's why he's here in Cleveland with Jerry the King. They're going to go to the game this weekend. They got a whole slew of events going on. I just always wanted to know. I always thought if I was a wrestler and I went back and watched the matches, I want to hear how the announcers are either selling me or not selling me. Did you ever have any beefs with some guys who are like, he's on a national audience, he's selling the other guy, I'm the one doing all the work, where is the love for me?
No, I've had the other side of it a lot. where they said, I went home and, or my wife said your call was great or whatever. Those are nice. But they had a heart for much of that time. I was their boss. They're not going to give me any crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think I was confident in what I did. So the announcers are supposed to do this. They're supposed to add the narrative to what you're seeing, keep everything connected. Today's wrestling announcers, a lot like a football guys, they deviate. They want to get the backstory. Everybody wants to be cute, have that little announcer repartee and, you know, hip, you know, everything's cool. And most people just want the story told. The wrestlers always made the music, gentlemen, and the announcers always provide the lyric. It's never going to change. It's like the ball game Sunday. I can call the Browns game Sunday, I can promise you. Help me with my board, get it all ready, because the game tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
You feel what they're doing in the moment, and then you give it a narrative that's pleasant, that fits. So that's a storyteller in me.
That's what always enhanced the thing. This is why, you know, and nothing against anybody doing it now, but when we see WrestleMania and it's the big event, it's the event that the buildup has been there for months about and the big pay-per-view, everybody's got their house parties, and if it's not the right voice on the call, it's what I used to say when it wasn't Marv Albert doing the NBA Finals. For a few years, it wasn't the NBA Finals to me. Right. It wasn't Marv. And I think there's a lot of people that feel that way even today. And I know they still feature you. They ask you to come back from time to time, and they have you do a match. But it's not WrestleMania without Jim Ross. I think a lot of wrestling fans got to feel the same way.
I appreciate that. It's been a big part of my life, no doubt about it. You know, coming from I graduated the class of 50. A little town in eastern Oklahoma called Westville. My ancestry got there in the Cherokees. I got there in the Trail of Tears. So I'm about a fifth generation Okie. But that meant so much to me to be a part of that. And then to see later on the guys I hired. You know, I hired The Rock, signed The Rock. He had no money. And he just got cut from the Calgary Stampeders, sleeping on a urine-stained mattress, all true. Oof. And he's a third-generation wrestler, so he had an interest in getting the business. And I went down to Florida to recruit him, and I remember going to a little restaurant, a little Cuban restaurant, and I remember exactly what we had. He had grilled chicken, black beans, and rice, yellow rice. And I felt like the lady and when Harry met Sally, I said, I'll have what he's having. So I have that meal, and they bring the checks. And before they brought the checks, by the way, I did a little market research. Every female in that joint came by to see if we needed something to drink. And many of them didn't even work there. They just wanted to get close to the great one. He had a tank top on, and if I had a tank top on, they would have been mass exodus. My body looks like I had a litter of pups, but nonetheless, so these guys start coming by. So they said, hey, JR, I said, what are you doing in town? I'm just talking to this young man right here, trying to get him to come to WWE. And they didn't have any aversion to him. So I said, well, the women certainly love the guy, and the men respect him. But he said, I'd like to buy lunch. And I said, I don't think so. And he said, well, I've only got $7 to my name. And I said, well, Vince has got a lot of money, and he's going to buy lunch. So I closed my deal. I recruited The Rock. I closed the deal, got some money wired to his account, so he'd have some money. Then I'm watching Ballers a few weeks ago. I watched regular, and his production company is called $7 Entertainment.
No kidding.
Oh, my God.
So that stuck with him all those years.
All those years.
That's incredible.
Oh, my God.
He's a class act. But I got happy at WrestleMania because a lot of the guys I signed, we had another class. We signed Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Dave Bautista, Randy Orton, and Shelton Benjamin on the same class. And that was interesting. Recruitment of Lesnar was good. I'm writing my second book, the sequel to Slobberknocker, and there's some good Brock Lesnar stuff in there because he was very unique to recruit and manage. You can only imagine. You can only imagine. It's like having a wild Hereford bull. It's led into a whole pasture of very friendly heifers. Now, get him off the air. He's a chauvinist.
What makes you interesting, and we'll get to Baker, we'll get to Browns and everything like that, but what makes you interesting is that you're here during this generation. You started out in the territory days. There's people who are wrestling fans here. We've had actually calls of like, I remember the Rocks, the Ox Baker, the great big riot that he started back in the 70s. Like, they remember that. What were some of the best memories that you have? I know we in this segment we're a little bit short on the time, but just go ahead. What is maybe the best memories you have of the way it used to be?
Seeing some, well, the way it used to be.
Yeah.
89 was a great year because I called three Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat matches with three different partners.
Wow.
In three different venues on TBS and pay-per-view. And that probably was the greatest trilogy I'd ever called. And the only thing that comes close to it was some matches I called actually this year for New Japan on Access TV with Mark Cuban's network with Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega.
They love that guy.
And they're really good. I mean, really, really good. So somebody said to me, some millennial that didn't have a clue, said, I bet you never thought you'd see any matches like Omega and Okada, did you? At one of our Q&As. That's a big part of our show at Hilarity Mars, yeah. Q&As, right? Yeah. And so I said, well, yeah, but before you were born, son, 1989, I had this three matches from Steamboat and Flair. You might want to check those out. I think you'll like them. So, and they were really special. So those are good. Great memories. And also, Lawler and I called Hogan and Rock at WrestleMania 18.
Oh, wow.
That was badass.
That would have been awesome.
Because that was a deal where the band got back together. We thought Rock would be this overwhelming hero, and Hogan a little older and longer in a tooth. He's about the NWO guy, blah, blah, blah. And they just reversed roles. And I was talking to some younger announcers. I said, I don't know how you did that. I said, because I listened to the audience.
Yeah.
And I watched my damn monitor.
Yeah.
And you just tell that story. So that was a very memorable moment in that regard. But there's Stone Cold's rise and the Attitude Era was nothing's ever been like that. So there were weeks on Monday nights, guys, believe it or not, and your sports fans here on the Fan are not going to believe this, but you can look it up. We have bigger quarter hour ratings on many Monday nights against football than you would believe.
Oh, yeah. There was time, I mean, for a long time you were beating them while we were kids. We were watching Monday Night Football and things like that. That was as big as it got back in those days. Because and Anthony, I don't mean to even speak for you, but there were a couple of different things where, you know, my kids are starting to watch it again now, so you start to watch a little bit more. But I was late 80s, early 90s, and then came back to it when the Attitude Era was going on and Stone Cold and The Rock and DX and things like that. Lime is basically the same way on all this.
It's what we did. It's what we did. We've got to remind everybody, Live with JR and the King, this Saturday afternoon. You guys can go. Everybody hearing this right now at Hilarities in Cleveland. Now, 2 p.m., there's a VIP meet-and-greet session with JR and the King. VIP ticket purchases is going to be $85. The actual showtime is 4 p.m., so just make sure to check out Hilarities. They've got general admission tickets as well, $35, which will get you in the door at 4 o'clock. It's going to be storytelling, it's going to be Q&A, and it's going to be two of the great broadcasters in WWE history, so check that out this weekend.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be fantastic coming up tomorrow afternoon, and you're one of the best storytellers out there. I've listened to your podcast. I've listened to the King's podcast. You guys are all – it's hard to find a guy who is in wrestling who's not a good storyteller. And basically, if there's any one of those guys, you probably never heard of those guys. So this is probably going to be one hell of a show coming up tomorrow. 2 p.m., the VIP meet-and-greet session. JR and the King for the VIP ticket. Go ahead and make that purchase. 4 p.m., the actual showtime. General admission tickets available, $35 to go on ahead over there and get over there over to Hilarities. JR with the King, the Live with JR and the King show coming up on Saturday afternoon. Coming up next, I want to talk to you about Baker Mayfield because a lot of people love Baker Mayfield here, and it's an overwhelming thing because we've been looking for a quarterback since Bernie Kosar.
Right.
And there's a real human aspect.
Oh, you're going to say Otto Graham.
Well, we had Bernie there for a while. We had Brian Sipe there for
a while.
We've been out in the desert for a while now. There's a real human aspect that's something that's very touching here between you two, where it's certainly a very close friendship between you and Baker Mayfield and tying back to Oklahoma football and now to the Cleveland Browns. So we'll talk about that when we come back. It's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Jim Ross, the legend, in studio with us, 92.3 The Fan. Back in The Fan, reactions coming in. People are loving Jim Ross with us. Again, he'll be at Hilarities tomorrow. 2 p.m. VIP meet and greet, 4 p.m. actual showtime. Hilarities.com. Check it out. A lot of people talking about Jim Ross. And it's honestly, it's just their own memories of what it was like when they watched wrestling from basically from everywhere you've been. We got people from all over and basically every generation that's been watching modern wrestling talking about you, Jim Ross. So I want to ask you about Baker Mayfield and the relationship you guys have, because one of the best stories that you tell is actually a really sad story. And it's about your wife who passed not too terribly long ago. And it was Baker Mayfield who came right up to you. Can you tell the story about how this all went?
Yeah, and on March 20th of 2017, my wife was riding her Vespa home from the gym. I was recording my podcast that night. And so she was coming home, and this kid was 17, allegedly was on was texting or something on his phone. She was on her Vespa, as I mentioned. He was in a 2000 Mercury Marquis, and he ran right over the top of her. And she had multiple skull fractures. And we kept her alive until her dad and her siblings could get to Oklahoma. Then I made the decision to pull the plug, which is not an easy decision to make. But the doctor said, JR, she makes it. She's not going to know who you are. She's not going to be able to eat. She's not going to be able to go to the bathroom. It's bad. So I knew my decision was going to be when the time came. Relishing it, but it had to be done. So she passes away, and then I'm at OU game that fall, and Baker at OU always warmed up in the south end zone, and he never threw a lot. He caught balls like he's Odell Beckham Jr., and he has amazing hands. He's catching balls. He's doing the whole routine.
Mm-hmm.
One hand behind his back, throwing it back behind his back, just having fun. So he sees me standing there at the end of the end zone. This is way before the four pads on early warm up. And he came over and gave me a hug, and he told me how sorry he was. I'd lost my wife. He said, "Always remember this, JR." I get emotional talking about it. He said, "Always remember this. I'll always have your back." And so then, that was the first game. As the season progressed during the year, at home games, I stand in the same spot, superstition. There he was, and he'd see me, he'd run over and say, "Remember, I got your back."
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're the quarterback. You should be thinking about your back. You know, I got your back too. But, you know, he was a sensitive kid. He's emotional. And guys are that personality, that A personality can either channel it with good days or bad days. The day he had at Kansas where he grabbed his crotch, people don't understand what the fans are saying to his parents, the belligerent nature of these students at KU was unacceptable. He saw it, his mom and dad, kind of a distressed area, and he reacted in a mm-hmm. negative way. That's not him. I thought it was funny when he got knocked down by the cops in Fayetteville, Arkansas. The boy was having a beer. He wasn't driving. He's 21 years old, so we won't break any laws in that regard. But he ran out of instinct. And Switzer said, "Well, my quarterbacks would never been caught."
He told that same story on Bull Fox. You're right about that.
So I always thought that, and I said this early on, and I was on Colin Cowherd's show. Colin's not a big fan of Baker's. But Colin is like a wrestling villain manager. His job is to stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
And Baker's such a lightning rod and a likable kid that he found a good subject matter to nail. But I said, "Man, you just don't know this guy." So I asked him on the air, I said, "Have you interviewed Baker?" "No." "Now, wait a minute. You're making these hard judgments of who he is, and you've never talked to him?" I think I caught him with his pants down a little bit. I said, I know Baker. I know his mom and dad. They're good people. He's a great guy. And wherever he goes, they're going to love him because he will get his ass in the foxhole and fight for you. That's Baker Mayfield."
It's so different, JR, because when he did the thing at Kansas, see, we didn't hear everything that came out of it. I hammered him.
Oh, we were crushing him.
Definitely
we were crushing him. We were talking about maturity issues.
I'm looking at this, and JR, I haven't had a quarterback in 20 years as a fan. I have not had a quarterback since Bernie Kosar was here. I was 5 years old, man. So I'm seeing Sam Darnold, who's 6'4 and statuesque and is a nice guy and smiling and quiet, and he's throwing it all over the place. You got Josh Allen, who's about the size of a giant, and you got these different quarterbacks are out there. And then I see Baker Mayfield, and I'll admit, there was a little bit of fear from what had just transpired where we got Johnny Manziel. And I know they're different guys. I know totally they're different right. guys. But there was a little bit of fear there. And it's almost storybook. Now, it's just started with him, and we are hoping that it continues this way. But it's almost storybook where here's a guy who's not 6 foot four, okay, who was a walk-on, all right? And
twice.
Exactly, twice. And we didn't think that he was ever going to be the first round pick in the first overall pick in the draft, let alone the first round. And was a guy who I just did not, until I actually had to sit and watch, I just did not think that he had it. And here he is saying what he wants to say, doing what he wants to do, doing it right. And obviously the reason that we feel good about the Browns going into the rest of the season in 2019 is because of him.
I think what you're saying, if I may try to interpret.
Please.
He has given you hope.
Yeah.
And I think that the Browns fan base, undeservingly so, didn't have a lot of hope with their football team the last several years. Their coaching hires have been suspect at best, to be honest with you. They can rectify that this time. They got time to make a good hire. I know who they should hire, I think, but nonetheless, I think that he gives the community hope. He's a leader, and he's I love the kid. I really do. I mean, for him to take time out of a pregame warm-up, of course, getting ready to play before 88,000 people to come hug JR and say, JR, I'm sorry, I'll always have your back, was heartwarming. Mm-hmm. I tell people, I told Colin Cowherd that. He couldn't – it kind of stopped him in his tracks. Because this kid's not a wise ass. He's not an out-of-control personality. He doesn't have daddy issues. I said, you said he had daddy issues. What the hell does that mean? What does that mean, Dr. Phil? What does that mean? So, anyhow, I love the kid. You guys are blessed to have him, and I hope he has a great game on Sunday as well. I think the Browns went outright on Sunday. I know they're the underdog.
As we said, the wrong team was favored.
Yeah.
In that game. Well, you've been noticing, and you're down there, JR. You've been on the sidelines. You have your superstitious spot that you stay. Well, the last 2 weeks, whether it was Oklahoma or on neutral field in the Big 12 championship, John Dorsey, the GM of the Browns, and obviously people are thinking, all right, he's not only recruiting, he's not only looking for players and scouting, but he's also looking for the next head coach. And Lincoln Riley's name gets brought up all the time. Baker was asked about it this week, actually gave a really good diplomatic answer about it. Didn't want to go down that path of getting people to speculate, but we're doing it. We're all speculating about Lincoln Riley, who's never sniffed the NFL, not one day. Do you think that is a match made in heaven? Do you think that makes sense? And would it be bittersweet for you because Lincoln's doing such a great job in Norman?
It would be bittersweet. I was at the Big 12 title game last week and on the sideline, and I stood next to Lincoln's father and his brother, who's on the coaching staff at KU until the hat came, Matt Hatter, Les Miles. So, They're indicating to me that he loves Norman and his neighborhood and his house, the people he runs around with. He's got a great the president of the new president of OU was on the sideline too. That never happened. So that's a very friendly, good move. Maybe preemptive strike to make sure that you know I'm for you. And then we have the best athletic director in the country. He's made great hires. He hired Lon Kruger and all these good, Lincoln and Bob. So he's another Ohioan. Hey, I would say that Bob Stoops would be more likely to come to Cleveland than Lincoln Riley. And I don't think Bob wants to coach anymore, so that kind of tells you where I'm coming from. Hmm. He's building an empire there. And I also think Dorsey was there not only to watch Lincoln coach or see how he handled the situation, how his demeanor was on the sideline, things of that nature. But we got about three or four offensive linemen that will play in the NFL. And from what I can see, the Browns are not long on. They don't have a Joe Thomas there anymore. How good would Becker be if they had Joe Thomas in his prime? So anyway, I don't think Lincoln moves. He believes he has one of the best jobs in the country. He's going to be making $5 or $6 million soon anyway. So I don't think he's ready for it or wants to do it yet. But someday, will he be a coach in the NFL? Absolutely, and I think it may be in Dallas.
Yeah, because people keep bringing that up, and Jason Garrett, he's won 4 games in a row now, and it's kind of like, he's back off the hot seat. Of course, they're always talking about him being fired in Dallas, and that might be the one. So you basically answered the question. If this was 2028, and he was 10 more years into his 44.
Different ballgame.
Yeah.
Yeah, different ballgame.
Because we're thinking about some of these young guys, and Lincoln Riley, I haven't seen any negative yet. Like, I got to see some negative to see, okay, is this something that might be ready to go to the NFL? And also, it's such a big job. Like, if one of the other guys from college, like we talk about a guy named Matt Campbell who's over there at Iowa State, if he comes here and it weren't to work out, he'd still get probably a better job than Iowa State coming out of Cleveland, where if it doesn't work out in Cleveland for Lincoln Riley, a job like Oklahoma doesn't really come around a whole lot.
No, no, absolutely not. I think he grew up a Dallas Cowboy fan, and that's kind of where it goes. And it's kind of a weak, Your Honor, I plead my case. It's not you're not going to get the verdict you want,
mm-hmm.
because he grew up as a Dallas Cowboy fan. A lot of people in Texas grew up Dallas Cowboy fans. Hello, you know, it's the way it works,
of course.
But he's got a great job there. They pay cash for a $180-something million improvement on the stadium and the facility. They got the best football facility right now. Anywhere, pro or college, and somebody's going to trump it. There's always does. He's got the, you know, he's got the bigger Johnson spends the money, and there they go. So
that's how it works.
That's how it works, man. So, but he's got a great scenario there. He's got a big. It's going to be interesting how he handles the staff this year, because we obviously need a new defensive coordinator. That position's open,
mm-hmm.
and no D coordinator of any worth is going to come to Oklahoma and not be able to bring their people. He already saw what our people do.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's going to be a lot of change. How he handles that transition is going to be very interesting.
That's a tough one. Jim Ross with us in studio. When we come back, I want to ask you about the King and your years with the King, and also some more on Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. We have Jim Ross, good old JR, in studio. He'll be at Hilarities tomorrow, hilarities.com. It's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lyman, live on The Fan. Browns Panthers coming up on Sunday. You'll hear it right here, 92.3 The Fan, all across the University Hospitals Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Yeah,
I thought we were going to do an hour on the Shockmaster, and so I'm a little annoyed that this went more Baker Mayfield than Shockmaster, because you know I had the poster on my wall and everything.
Now what were you were you with them when the Shockmaster came out?
Okay, I laughed at it though.
Where were you when you heard about this? And
Some of our guys, you see what happened to Fred on TV, Fred Ottman.
Yeah, tugboat.
You see what happened to Fred? I was thinking, oh no, did Fred get hurt? Oh no, this is even better.
It hurt his ego.
Well, how long did it take for you to actually see it, though? Because back then it wasn't like it was all over the internet.
It was a few days, actually. There wasn't as much digital this and digital that, yeah. Social media, what have you. Now WWE owns that.
Yeah.
They own that library.
Oh, yeah.
Among other libraries. And it gets a little airplay here, there, and yon. On the blooper reel, blooper shows.
What was your... There's so many things that were... Obviously, he trips over the 2x4, the 4x4.
The mask falls off.
And they're all laughing except for Sid Vicious, who starts screaming at him. But what was your reaction when you saw the Stormtrooper helmet? That's just a Stormtrooper helmet that's painted over with glitter.
It's like bedazzled.
They didn't even...
Ill-conceived.
No offense to anybody who might have been involved who might be a buddy, but...
No, I'm with you.
They just painted over a Stormtrooper.
It was hideous, let's be honest.
A Stormtrooper helmet.
And they didn't have the production where with it all that Vince's group has. That would never happen in WWE. I promise you.
Oh, God, I hope not.
No, it wouldn't.
It's a mini explosion right around it, like a light bulb going out.
And he's 400 pounds.
Yeah. He's like stumbling through
the
wall.
It was like a turtle landing on its shell.
And they basically,
and his arms and legs are just kicking,
It looked like they cut a hole out of a rug and threw it over him. It was like, get out there. There you go. What was the – who was the wrestler who you didn't think – when you first saw you, like, you guys are going to do this, and he ended up being really good?
Oh, boy.
Shane McMahon.
let me think. I have to think about that a little bit. A lot of guys stepped up when they saw the money they could make.
Yeah,
found out what motivated most people. I found this out about wrestling and football and many walks of life. When people say it's not about the money, you bet your sweet ass it's all about the money. And I think that when the guys saw some of those checks, they figured out, hey man, I'm in a real good spot right now. I never thought that Gold Dust would get over like he did.
I love Gold
Dust. We loved Gold Dust.
It was so provocative. It fit that TV-14 rating in the Attitude Era. And because in our creative meetings, talking about how we wanted to take the character, was he gay? Was he not? Was he whatever? what, metrosexual. I don't know. I'm lost on that stuff anyway.
It was a broad brush.
Yeah. Yes. Big, and then his wife, Terry, Marlena, was the extra piece of that puzzle.
Yeah.
We even talked about one time. She had the cigars and all that, you know. And she had a great physique. She worked out really hard and arms and so forth. Good stuff. And she we're going to give her a prosthetic penis.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah. And so that the camera would occasionally glance at it. So we're talking to Vincent. Okay.
We're on a radio show.
This is the attitude era.
I guess anything goes.
So great.
I mean,
I guess you want Lawler and I to lay out, right? We're going to say, well, you look at that penis.
God.
And we didn't go that way, but she still had the cigar and, you know, the phallic symbol.
Uh-huh.
There's so many subtleties in that whole deal, but I never thought that people would take
subtlety of a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Yo, jackhammer. You're right. So anyway, I didn't, but that got over big, and he made good money, and they were great talents. They added a lot to the show, and then he became funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they teamed him up with Booker T,
that was funny.
That
stuff.
That was some of the best stuff. Best tag team comedy I've seen in a while.
And it wasn't manufactured. They had chemistry.
Yeah.
That's how it worked. So, how did Austin get over so big? Because he's himself. You rode down a road with him, had a beer, you'd hear same pacing, same thematic theme. It's just, he's just who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was the real guys get over. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair's Ric Flair, man. Jerry Lawler's Jerry Lawler. You know, Jerry and I traveled thousands and thousands of miles together. We had a little routine. He always drove. He didn't want anybody driving but him. And he also had control of the radio. I had the control of the sports page, the USA Today, and I would read the sports page, little stories, and then we'd make each other laugh. Or I'd make fun of something in the paper. I had no problem making fun of the Indians from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he'd have a great repartee with that deal. But he and I made each other laugh so much. Going down the road, it was like people thought we were high. You know? And I told someone a story. I said, we were in North Dakota somewhere one time, and we saw this sign. I said, Jerry, God almighty, look at this sign. It said, KSC Buffet. 5 exits or something.
Oh, my God.
I said, man, we got to stop there. It's like going to Wally World, you know, or something big.
Was it open?
Hell, yeah, it was open. And, you know, it was all you could pitch till you win, as my grandpa would say.
Nice.
Buffet, pitch till you win. And we were childlike. Then we walk in, it's like walking to Santa's workshop. Oh, man, look. Coleslaw, breasts, legs.
Gravy.
Yeah, gravy. Love the gravy. So we must have been there an hour. It was like we're dining at we're going to dinner tomorrow night at the Cleveland Chop House. Cleveland Chop.
The place?
Good you know spot. About
yeah.
It?
Yeah. Warehouse District?
Yeah, that's where we're going tomorrow night. With my buddies doing the game Sunday for ESPN, Bill Rosinski, the radio guy.
Okay, yeah.
He's great, too. He's probably as good a radio guy at what he does. And the great deal they have with his wife, she's his spotter. Pretty cool.
I had no idea.
Kids are grown.
Yeah.
They travel. They go to all these games. And I think it's the coolest thing in the world. Great people. So that's where we're going to go. But yeah, Lauder and I had our little routines. He always listened to oldies. Because he liked to sing along. So we had a little redneck karaoke in our rental car. And I remember vividly him singing the Peter Noon parts of Herman's Hermits. You know, Mrs. Brown, you've got that deal.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. That was before lipstick cameras. We should be taping this, man. Because there's a dearth of content out there. We could get some stuff here, but he was just great. And that's what we do tomorrow. We go on a road trip with you. You're in the car. We're all on a bus, and the fans ask questions, and we either answer the questions and we tell stories, segue to something else.
Mm-hmm.
I told somebody the other day, so the only thing that we know about our show, we know what time we're going to take the stage, and we know about what time we're going to leave. Other than that, it's all ad lib, and it's great.
That's incredible. JR, we thank you very much. Remember, Live with JR and the King, the show's Saturday afternoon, December 8th. That's tomorrow.
at Hilarity's right here in downtown Cleveland. 2 p.m. VIP meet and greet session with JR and the
what
gang.
What an opportunity.
VIP ticket.
Look at the fun we've had, and I'm telling you, yeah, the stories he's going to be able to tell in there. A little bit
he's
unfiltered.
He's got to watch his mouth on the air, yeah, so hopefully it's going to be crazy tomorrow. We know it is. 4 p.m. the actual showtime tomorrow, available at Hilarities.com. Check him out on Twitter, JR's Barbecue, JR's BBQ, Instagram, Facebook, Jim Ross Barbecue. JR, we thank you so much for the time.
You guys are great. I appreciate you having me on, and your hospitality has been amazing.
Absolutely.
And Boomer Sooner, fellas. Boomer Sooner.
Even we can do it.
Yep.
Even
finally, Boomer someone's doing it on do the it. Air here.
Finally. We'll join Owen. Boomer Sooner.
JR, we thank
go
you very
Browns.
Much.
Thank you, guys.
The great Jim Ross joining us on the show. We thank him. We thank Jonathan Wells. We thank Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. All these interviews, especially good old JR, on 923thefan.com. Make sure you get on over there. We'll be back on Monday morning, 6 to 10, for Big Country, for Jeff, for Kenny, for the Slippery Wizard, Anthony Lima. I'm Ken Carman. Have a wonderful Tall Boy Friday, my friend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.